Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Make, Take, Murder by Joanna Campbell Slann, narrated by Amy McFadden. 1. Monday, December 14th. I was rummaging around in the trash dumpster, searching for my lost paycheck, when I reached down and grabbed Cindy Gambrowski's severed leg. Of course, I didn't know it was her leg. I didn't know whose leg it was. In fact, I couldn't even be sure it was a real live, dead leg at all. All I knew was that it was shaped like a leg, it was heavy, its surface felt like skin, only colder, and it was gross. I immediately dropped what I was holding. Yeek! I screamed. It's a leg! I found a leg!
Ha, ha, ha. Very funny, Kiki Lowenstein. When you're finished being a complete dope, how about you find your paycheck so you can get out of there?
Said Bama.
We've got our Monday night crop to prep for.
That's my business partner for you. She has all the empathy of a pet rock. Clearly, she was not planning to come to my assistance. She thought I was kidding about the leg. Or wrong. Well, maybe I was. I swallowed hard and told myself to calm down. After all, how could a human shin, complete with five toes, get inside the big green trash bin? Why would anyone dump body parts in with the paper garbage we generated at Time in a Bottle, the scrapbook store where Bama and I work? This had to be someone's idea of a sick joke. I must have been mistaken. Who'd put a body part in the dumpster, especially in our trash bin? Don't be ridiculous. Concentrate on finding that paycheck so you can get out of here. If only I could see better. It's pretty dark inside a dumpster with the lid propped open only an inch. The day dawned unusually warm for December, but that's St. Louis for you. We tend to swing from one extreme to another. Either we suffer from muggy, ghastly hot days, or we rival polar expeditions for bone-chilling cold. You can walk outside to a clear sky one minute, dodge pelting golf balls of hail the next, and finish the 24-hour period with a pea-soup-colored haze announcing an oncoming tornado. It sure isn't boring, I'll give it that. Neither was my life.
I need some help here, Bama,
I called. I figured at the very least she'd hold the lid open for me. But no, she had given me a boost so I could climb inside the slime pit, but that was all. After I scrambled over the edge and into the trash, Bama stuck a small stick between the metal lid and the lip of the container. Then she backed away. Bama didn't care how tough a time I was having. This was her passive-aggressive way of teaching me a lesson. Unless I also learned Braille, this education was going nowhere, fast. Too darn dark in here to see anything. I'm not climbing in after you, Kiki. I won't. Don't ask. Quit whining and find your paycheck. Customers will be arriving any minute. I have work to do for the crop this evening.
Well, I had work to do, too.
I was eager for the activity that would take my mind off how horribly my 12-year-old daughter had been behaving lately.
This is all your fault,
Bama called to me, by way of adding insult to smelly injury.
Duh, that I knew.
I should have paid attention. I shouldn't have pushed all those loose papers into the trash can by the desk. I should have put my paycheck in my purse the moment Bama handed it over yesterday. Shoulda, woulda, coulda, and didn't. I discovered my mistake late last night. This morning, when Bama showed up, I explained to her what had happened. She promptly told me she was not about to reissue my paycheck. Thank you.
That costs money.
Correction, that wastes money.
You tossed it, you lost it.
I could tell by the smirk she was proud of her little rhyme. In fact, I bet she was standing outside the dumpster, grinning from ear to ear. All right, I would take my bitter medicine, but I couldn't perform my punishment without more light.
Bama, it's too dark. I can't see anything.
All I can do is feel stuff with my fingers, and I felt something icky. You'll have to lift the lid higher.
Can't. Don't want to touch it. I'll get my new coat dirty.
She showed up this morning in a cardinal red wrap coat that I coveted. It was gorgeous. Not only is red my favorite color, but I really need a new winter coat. Just last week, I'd thrown my old winter coat in the garbage. Moths had feasted on the sleeves over the summer. The shredded lining drooped from under the hem. An unidentified stain had crept across the shoulder blades. If our store made money over the holidays, I could use a part of the promised bonus to buy a new coat when the department stores had their after-Christmas sales. Until then, every penny I could save would go toward purchasing a nice Hanukkah gift for my daughter, Anya. She lusted after a pair of Uggs.
All my friends own a pair,
she pouted. But instead of prepping for our upcoming crop or creating displays to entice our customers to spend money, I was stuck here in the dumpster digging around for my lost paycheck, with no help forthcoming from my partner, Bama. None at all. She is so annoying.
At least go get me some light.
I could feel the thing I'd dropped as it leaned against my leg. It couldn't possibly be anything remotely human.
Or could it?
It sure seemed real. I shook my head to clear it. I haven't been sleeping well lately. Maybe that's why I thought I was touching a severed limb.
You need light? Hang on,
Bama yelled.
I'll be back. Don't go anywhere.
As if I could. I was too short to climb out of the dumpster without A, a hand up, or B, a ladder. Instead, I plastered myself in a corner, far away from the icky, sticky, human, calf-shaped thing I'd tossed back into the mess. I figured that by wedging myself between two walls, nothing could sneak up behind me. But it could fall down from above. I felt a tickle.
Eek! Something dropped down the back of my blouse!
I yelled so loud I thought I ejected my tonsils. Bama didn't respond. I tugged at my top and did the shimmy, hoping whatever small creature was sharing my clothing would vacate the building. Pronto.
Hey, Kiki!
Bama banged her fist against the metal to get my attention. The resulting bong was as loud as if I were standing inside Big Ben. I could barely hear her next comment.
Here's a flashlight.
The lid opened wide. Sunlight flooded the interior and blinded me. I blinked, but I didn't duck as a big blue plastic flashlight flew over the lip of the dumpster and hit me up the side of the head.
Ow!
Bama, that hurt!
Sorry,
she sang out. I knew she wasn't. I had to dig through the trash to find the plastic cylinder. Once I had it in my hand, I twisted it to turn it on. The stupid beam flickered twice, then died. I slapped the casing against my palm. The light came on. I dug around in the papers and goo of our leftover foodstuffs. When the light wavered, I banged the flashlight against the dumpster wall. This time, it stayed bright. I shone the beam in the direction of my feet, moving it from left to right in a sweeping motion. Five pink toes with painted nails winked up at me from between two garbage bags.
Eek!
I screamed.
It's a leg! Bama, I'm not kidding! Help! Help! Get me out of here!
I stuffed the flashlight into my waistband and tried to scale the wall of the dumpster.
The lid! Lift the lid!
Thunk. Instead of lifting the lid, Bama had dropped it.
Phone!
Her voice came from far away.
Be right back.
Bama, wait, please, let me out! Out!
I banged on the wall and yelled some more. I jumped up pogo stick style and struggled to get a purchase on the rim. I couldn't do it. My fingernails screeched as they slid down the metal. Carefully avoiding the far end of the heap, or body part village, as I nicknamed it in my head, I heaped bags one on top of each other. When I had a small pile, I climbed them. That didn't work either. They shifted and sank under my weight. I tried again, with the same result. The whole time I yelled and cried and screamed for help. Finally, I wore myself out. I sank down in the corner of the dumpster and started to snivel. Bama took her own sweet time. I hate that woman. I really do. 2.
Tell me again why you were in the dumpster.
Detective Stan Hodcho adjusted his weight in the straight-back kitchen chair. We sat across from each other in the back room of Time in a Bottle, his pen poised over an open steno pad. The break table was between us. Bama was on my right. Hodcho's eyes never left my face as he asked me to go back over my morning. I'd met Detective Stan Hodcho earlier this summer when I'd visited the house of a hoarder. We'd developed a nodding acquaintance.
Go on, Kiki. Take your time. Start before you got here this morning. At the beginning. You were here yesterday? On a Sunday.
I swallowed hard and fanned myself. Another swig of Diet Dr. Pepper helped me push down the knot in my throat, the bulge threatening to explode along with the contents of my stomach. Staring off into the storage shelves and forcing myself to focus, I mumbled through what had happened the night before. I explained how a new customer came in right at closing when I worked the sales floor alone, how that new customer was struggling with two howling toddlers, how she needed A, a break from parenting, and B, more supplies, how I'd bounced said toddlers on my knee while she roamed around the store. Squeezing my eyes shut harder, I visualized the transformation apparent on my customer's face. She had grown more and more relaxed as she thought about the album she was making for a friend's birthday. The kids were thrilled with the graham crackers I fed them and later cleaned out of our carpet. I told Hodcho how the new customer left smiling, dispensing hugs and kisses to her little darlings. A different woman altogether from the stressed-out mess who'd stumbled over our threshold. Crafting was like that. We all grew stronger and wiser when we turned our hands to the act of creating, rather than fretting. How many times have I seen stressed-out women, ladies with shoulders hunched around their ears, slowly unwind as they became engrossed in a new project? Too many to count, actually. Since Bama and I had come aboard as part owners, we'd moved Time in a Bottle a bit more toward paper crafting in general, instead of focusing on scrapbooking. It wasn't a big change, no way, just a subtle shift. Dodie Goldfader, the majority stockholder and founder, agreed to give our new, broader emphasis a try. As a result, our sales numbers were up, our patron count was rising. Despite the downturn in the economy, our business seemed to be doing well. A lot of new faces turned into regulars after attending our popular ATC, Artist Trading Card, classes, or our latest offering, Decor on a Dime. An inevitable downside to all this was more work. Bama and I exhausted ourselves trying to cover all the store hours, plus our prep time and our after-hours work, keeping up with stocking, pricing, and market trends. On occasion, we brought in help. My friend, Clancy Whitehead, would pitch in as often as possible. But Bama and I were scared to spend too much money on part-time help, especially since we were just getting our feet wet as business owners. After my late-arriving customer left, I stayed an additional 30 minutes to clean up. We'd had a marathon die-cutting class that Sunday night. I'd also promised Bama I'd get the holiday decorations up, but those would have to wait. I finished my recitation with this. I came in early this morning to finish prepping for our Monday night crop. We're open 7 days a week. With the holidays coming, our hours are extended. By the time a day is done, I'm usually slap-happy. Totally exhausted. I lost my paycheck because I wasn't thinking straight. I explained to Hodcho how I had used broad sweeps of my arm to scoot paper debris into our waste paper cans. This had been unusual for me. Usually, my guilty conscience shrieks, "Recycle! Check for small bits you can reuse!" But not last night. I was too tuckered out. I was staggering about on my feet by the time I got home and went to bed, I said. It wasn't until I got dressed this morning that it hit me that I didn't remember putting away my paycheck. I had dug deep in the pockets of the pants I'd worn the day before and discovered lint. Nothing else but fuzz, and certainly no paycheck. "I knew the paycheck should have been there," I explained to Hadjo. Bama had handed it to me shortly before I had eaten lunch, around dinner time, my third straight day of peanut butter straight from the jar. The only possible conclusion was that I'd tossed the check into the trash by mistake.
"That's when you climbed into the dumpster?"
he asked. "Yup, with a little help." Bama gave me a boost over the side. I turned a little green as I recalled the squishy feel of cold flesh in my hands.
"You all right?"
Hadjo leaned slightly forward, as if to catch me if I fell. I shook my head to clear it. How come what I touched felt so soft? I wondered out loud. Hadjo looked tough, but I knew from prior meetings that he had a soft side. He was tan and craggy, with high cheekbones that hinted he might have some native Indian blood in him.
"The leg felt squishy, because that's how one's flesh feels after a while,"
he explained.
"The body starts decomposing very quickly, even when it's cold outside. You've probably only ever touched someone newly dead, or someone just embalmed, right?"
I remembered stroking my husband George's face when he was in his casket. His flesh felt cool and unpleasantly plump, like an unripe peach. I had kissed Nana's face as she lay on a bed of white sherd fabric, her small body looking shrunken in a way too big metal coffin. By the end of her life, her once lovely skin hung on her bones, but even then, there had been a certain resistance to the pressure of my lips. "That's right. I've only touched folks after they've been prepared. If this wasn't the middle of December, if the weather had been hotter, that piece of leg would have been... ugh." I shivered and checked to see if the path to the bathroom was clear.
"Forget about it. You don't want to go there,"
Hadjo said. He reached over and squeezed my hand, then released it just as quickly. I stared at my fingertips. The warmth he'd transferred flowed up my arm. With reluctance, I pulled my hand away from where we were nearly fingertip to fingertip. I didn't want to offend him, but I badly needed human companionship, so much so that I worried I'd throw myself at him and start to sob. His gesture of kindness came scarily close to opening floodgates of pent-up emotion inside me. Lately, loneliness had been my constant companion. Loneliness and my pets, Gracie the Great Dane and Martin, my yellow tabby. My romantic life was in the tank. I couldn't even go there. It was too frustrating and humiliating to consider. I'd never had such a bleak period of parenting, either. Since Anya turned 12 last summer, she has wanted less and less to do with me. This morning was the capper. She instructed me to drop her off a block away from a friend's house so she wouldn't be seen leaving my car. Shifting in my chair, avoiding Hadjo's eyes, I fought an urge to cry. Blinking fast and hard, I stared at the spot usually occupied by Gracie, my darling Great Dane. She was at the vet's office. I couldn't let my thoughts dwell on her. Not right now. It was too worrisome. I took in a long and even breath. I needed to get control of my emotions. This wasn't the time to succumb to negativity. It was the holiday season, for goodness sake. Ho, ho, ho! Ah, crud. A little voice inside me announced, "What you really need, Kiki Lowenstein, is a good old-fashioned pity party, a sob fest, with lots of wine and chocolate." but I pinched myself hard and refused to let even one little tear leak out, because I didn't have time for this. I really didn't. 3.
You have my personal cell,
Hadcho said as he got to his feet.
You think of anything, you need anything, you give me a call.
His eyes held mine. I responded by walking quickly toward the back room. A spark flew between us, I swear it. It felt great and awful at the same time. Mainly, it planted a seed of worry. I needed an attraction to Hadcho like I needed a frontal lobotomy. What was it with me and cops? Would I ever learn? Men in law enforcement and I did not play well together. I hastened to shove the card into my back pocket. With any luck, I'd run it through the wash and pick it out of the lint trap in my dryer. I already had one detective on speed dial, and if I'd had any brains, I would have dumped that particular phone number months ago.
I mean it, Kiki,
Hadcho said, with a quiet intensity that told me he knew I was resistant to asking for his help.
Are we safe?
Bama stepped between me and the detective, her head tilted, her mouth drawn into a thin, tight line. She waved a pale hand in the general direction of the back door and the unseen dumpster, which was now out of commission. The yellow plastic tape officially designated it as a crime scene. No telling how long it would take for the investigators to go over it. More likely, we'd have to replace that big green box. Visions of dollar signs danced in my head.
Whoever did that hates women.
Bama's voice trembled. My head jerked up. I hadn't thought of that. She was right, and her suggestion sent a chill through me.
He,
and she jerked a thumb at Detective Ortega, the detective who'd been dispatched along with Hadcho to interview her in the store's office while Hadcho and I had been chatting on the display floor.
He says you're in charge of this investigation. Lead detective or whatever. I want to know what you're planning to do to protect us. Someone put that in our trash. They could have chosen another site. They didn't. They chose us.
Bama wasn't much of a talker, and this outburst surprised me. I figured she'd answer the other detective in monosyllables and get back to work. In fact, I'd sort of forgotten about her. Separating witnesses was a common procedure. Smart, too. Detective Ortega could compare her responses to mine when he and Detective Hadcho reconvened at the station. Ortega was the stereotypical cop from TV shows, a beefy, blocky body topped off by a face both bulbous and tough at the same time. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Ortega flash a message in code to his partner. With only a hint of movement, he spread his hands below waist level to suggest,
I tried. What can I do? We'll increase patrols and ask the local police to do the same. If you know a reason why someone would dump a body part on your property, you need to tell me. Right now.
That last word was a growl. Hadjo's brown eyes turned black as they narrowed.
A reason? Sure. I can give you a couple. Because women come here. Because if you hate women, you'd want to scare them.
Bama's chin was raised defiantly, but the tremor was unmistakable.
How would anyone guess that I'd go dumpster diving? I asked. I hadn't exactly planned to lose my paycheck.
Three pairs of eyes turned on me.
Good question, said Hadcho,
his face a perfect blank.
Dang,
he would make a heck of a poker player.
Care to speculate?
Bama and I exchanged glances.
How would someone let you know he'd dropped off a startling package for you? Assuming, that is, that his goal was to have you find a severed limb in your own dumpster. What's your normal routine?
He continued.
Hang on.
Bama marched off, came back fast, with three laminated sheets. On them were our opening procedures, hours of operation procedures, and our closing procedures.
She was a great one for lists, rules, and protocol.
Without a word, she handed them to Ortega, as he was nearest to her. He read from the opening procedures.
1. Do a quick survey of the grounds. Pick up any trash before entering the store. Bring that sack into the store. See number 6. 2. Disable the alarm. Bring the cash drawer to register. 3. Turn on light banks numbers 1, 2, and 3. Check the phone for overnight messages. Write them down. Clear the message bank. 4. Turn over sign to read open. From this point on, customers are your number one priority. Listen for the door minder and the phone. 5. Do a quick clockwise surveillance of the sales floor. Return any misplaced merchandise to its correct positioning. Check for loose caps on liquids and inks. 6. Collect any trash from inside the store, including the refrigerator. Bag it. Deposit it in the dumpster by the back door. 7. Check the daily to-do list for chores by day and by date.
Kiki, you got here first, said Bama. Did you do all that?
You know I didn't. I couldn't have. I was running late.
You didn't check the outside? Didn't empty the trash?
I just told you that I emptied it last night. I knew there wouldn't be any this morning. And, because I was behind, I didn't check the phone messages.
And you didn't tell me? You should have told me. I could have done that first thing.
Bama's voice climbed to new and irritating heights.
I figured I'd get to them later. Besides, we're both available by cell phone.
Bama muttered darkly under her breath. You know that saying, if looks could kill? I'm pretty confident the originator worked closely with Bama. She shot me one of her rollover, exposure, soft belly, and offer up your jugular glances. I felt myself wince. Bama is a by-the-book type of person. She borders on obsessive-compulsive, actually. I, on the other hand, am the queen of wing it. I must admit that her systems have caused time in a bottle to function more smoothly. Our sales were up, our shrinkage was down, and we rarely had too much or too little of any particular merchandise.
Just to cover all our bases, let's go listen to your calls.
Hodcho led the way to the office. We squeezed in, huddled around the immaculate desktop. The inbox was empty, the Formica top was spotless, and no detritus of office clutter marred its naked expanse. Bama slid behind the desk with a graceful, practiced movement. Turning to face the shelving unit where the phone base unit sat, she punched the fast-blinking Play Messages button. The first message was a call from a customer asking us to place a special order. Bama dutifully and pointedly wrote this down. I sensed a certain restlessness from the two detectives, but neither commented. The second message chilled me to the core.
Check your dumpster out back,
intoned a computerized voice, flat of inflection and phrasing, reminding me of a GPS or an automated phone system. The voice droned on without emphasis.
Check it carefully. I left a gift for you. A piece of meat. Shank steak. Take it as a warning. For you scrappers, and for all those rich, snotty women who shop at your store.
4. We never made it to message number 3. The four of us were staring at the phone when the back door flew open. A young man wearing a service uniform labeled Crime Scene Unit came in running.
Ortega! Hodcho! Found something. You better come take a look.
Both detectives ran after Mr. Crime Scene, leaving Bama and me to sit like chastised kids in the principal's office. Only, instead of being pale or red in the face, we were a ghastly shade of green. I know this because I caught a reflection of us in the big glass-covered landscape Bama had hung on the far wall of the office. The pristine snow in the Colorado scenery bounced back our sickly skin tones. Those evergreens had nothing on us. We were a sickly shade that Crayola might have copied, labeled bilious, and put in their famous black and gold box.
Crud,
I managed, My whole body sagged, my eyes fluttered, and the pressing insistence of exhaustion pinned me to the...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?